They're on. Oh, there you go.
They're on now.
There it is.
Whoa.
Yep.
I'll dispense with the previous details because they were administrative in nature. We have to be done today. In morning and afternoon committees that use this room need to be done early. So we're going to be done at 9:45 today because there's going to be training for a member of the Minnesota House of Representatives in this room this morning and this afternoon. So I think we'll have plenty of time. We normally would have 90 minutes in previous years, and we just have one item and no action item on the agenda today to discuss the reinsurance program here in the state of Minnesota. We have a series of presenters, and we're going to kind of just monitor and manage the time. What my wishes are going to be is that as you present, you have enough time to be able to get your message to the committee, and the committee members may have questions. And I'm not going to assign time for each person or each group, so I'm going to ask you to be on the honor system. If need be, I will, you know, speed you up a little bit, ask testifiers as well to stay through the committee hearing in case there are some overlap questions or folks want to get a chance to follow up with some questions. So with that, the first order of business that we have is the approval of the minutes from our meeting of we had work session yesterday, Thursday of last week. So with that, Representative Finke, have you had a chance to review the minutes for this morning?
I have. They're immaculate.
Well, that's wonderful.
I moved the minute.
Thank you. Immaculate doesn't necessarily move it, but we appreciate the compliment for the process here. So with that, any additions or corrections to the minutes? Seeing none, hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? All right. The action item for this morning, as I mentioned, is to talk about the individual health insurance market and specifically the reinsurance program. And our first presenter this morning is a deputy commissioner from the Minnesota Department of Commerce, Julia Dreyer, and we also have Sam Smith, who's the governor's director here. What they are going to do for members who are not familiar with the reinsurance program, they are going to review with us the governor's proposal for funding that program for the next 2 years. I think it's universally agreed, at least that's what I'm hearing, that we need to do something in this this area to continue some form of reinsurance. The question always becomes, how does one fund this? And the governor has a proposal. There are some other proposals that are being floated out there. And so this morning's goal is to hear those different proposals so that when the time comes, we can make an informed decision about how to proceed with that as we move forward. So with that, again, the reinsurance program, you'll learn more about it as we go on. And with that, the governor's presentation on the funding of the reinsurance program. Deputy Commissioner, welcome to the committee this morning.
Great, thank you. Good morning.
State your name for the record and proceed.
Absolutely. My name is Julia Dreyer. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Insurance. And again, thank you for the opportunity to share with you today some information on the reinsurance program, otherwise known as the Minnesota Premium Security Plan. Reinsurance provides insurance for insurance companies to help cover the cost of caring for the most expensive patients. Reinsurance is a proven program that helps to stabilize market premiums, maintain enrollment levels, and helps to ensure that consumers have meaningful choices on the individual health insurance market. Without action this year, the premium security plan will be depleted, and the Minnesotans on the individual market are at significant risk of a 25% or more premium increase on the individual market. This means people may lose health insurance coverage, fewer Minnesotans will receive primary care, and more people will rely on expensive treatment in an emergency room. As background, roughly 187,000 Minnesotans get health care coverage through the individual market. Enrollees include people who don't have access to insurance through their employer or a program like Minnesota Care, Medicare, or medical assistance. They include independent contractors, farmers, employees working for a small business that may not offer health insurance, as well as early retirees. As background, in 2016, Minnesota's individual insurance market was in crisis. There was a federal reinsurance program that had expired. Commerce was seeing double-digit rate increases and requests from plans to cap the number of enrollees. One company did exit the market, and additionally, we were seeing shifts in plan designs, like creating narrower provider networks to help carriers to be able to reduce costs. Gross average premium saw 155% increase from 2014 to 2017. These premium increases contributed to fewer people buying insurance, and we saw enrollment drop almost in half from its peak in 2016. All of this is pointing to what we would conceive to be a market collapse. So to help address this issue, Minnesota established a reinsurance program in 2017 to help stabilize the individual market and lowering premium costs for those who have to buy insurance on their own. We were the second state in the country to establish a state-based reinsurance program. Alaska did best us a little bit on that one. Our program reimburses 80% of claims that are between $50,000 and $250,000. And in 2022, the coinsurance rate, so that 80%, was reduced down to 60% for budgetary reasons. The claims for reinsurance are generally for individuals who have very complex health needs. So think someone who has cancer, they may have diabetes in addition to other comorbidities or health conditions, or a premature baby who has an intensive care stay. Reinsurance payments must be used to pay claims, and they cannot be used for health plan administrative expenses. So we operate this program through a federal program called a 1332 waiver. Section 1332 of the Affordable Care Act allows states with federal approval to waive certain requirements of the law as long as we meet certain requirements. Specifically, we have to prove that our program offers coverage that is at least as comprehensive and as affordable as it would be without the waiver. It also has to cover a comparable number of people. And finally, it can't increase the federal deficit. Through this program, the state receives federal funds through savings generated through lower premium. Based on the amount of the premium tax credits that the federal government would have otherwise provided to eligible individuals, and to date, we've received over $650 million in federal funds. The state's reinsurance program has been successful in three key ways. First, we've been able to maximize federal funding to help keep premiums low for everyone in the individual market, including those who buy their insurance somewhere other than MNsure. Two, we've stabilized that individual market. So we've had carriers stay in the market. We did lose one small carrier to a merger, also gained a new health plan. Every county in Minnesota has at least two different carriers offering coverage, with most having three or four. And every county has multiple plan options for people to choose from. And finally, we've been able to reduce premiums by 20% on average. There was one year where premiums were reduced by 15%, and that was the year that the coinsurance rate was 60%. Commerce doesn't do this work on our own. We're very lucky here in Minnesota to be able to benefit from the expertise and the structure of previous healthcare efforts and have the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association, or MCHA, oversee the day-to-day work of the reinsurance program. So prior to the Affordable Care Act, MCHA managed the state's high-risk pool to help provide coverage to individuals with pre-existing conditions or other high-cost needs. And as a state, we've been able to rely on MCHA's governance, leadership, and payment infrastructure to help manage the program. This work is overseen by a board that consists of members from across the healthcare sector as well as community. MCHA also partners and works with Wakely, an actuarial company, to evaluate and report on the high-cost claims throughout the year. We have required quarterly and annual reporting for the program, in addition to regular state and federal audits. As I noted previously, Minnesota was the second state in the country to establish a reinsurance program, and since then, many other states have built on our expertise here in Minnesota and our experience and have established their own reinsurance programs. They all look a little different depending on the state's particular market and their needs. And in general, there is a lot of flexibility in designing a reinsurance program, particularly around how the program is designed and funded. So for example, some programs only reimburse for claims associated with certain medical conditions. States have different coinsurance rates and caps and may in some cases pair their reinsurance programs with other health reform efforts. Minnesota is one of five states that rely on general funds to pay for the state's share of the program. Other states leverage a combination of taxes, fees, assessments, or other sources of income to pay for the state share. This includes things like interest income, exchange user fees, and personal responsibility fines. Of the states that have assessments, most are paid by insurers, although states do vary as to what insurers are included in that assessment. and that this list includes Alaska, Colorado, Delaware, New Hampshire, and our neighbor, North Dakota. Other states have relied on a premium assessment on, again, Alaska, Colorado, Idaho, Maine, Maryland, method of funding. Colorado also had an assessment on hospitals, but that they have since phased that out. The reinsurance program is currently funded through the end of 2025, though we have authority from the federal government to run the program until 2027. If this funding expires, people will be facing, again, a 25% premium increase on top of normal cost increases. Additionally, people in the individual market currently have access to increased tax credits that limit their premiums to 8.5% of their income, and these enhanced tax credits are set to expire at the end of 2025 as well. So we're worried about a handful of things happening. One, we know that when premiums increase, people either drop coverage or choose to enroll in a plan with a less expensive premium, but generally with a higher deductible or more cost sharing, and that makes it harder for people to pay. Second, a drop in enrollment makes it difficult for Minnesota to contemplate other strategies to address issues in our market, so that access to federal pass-through funding is retrospective, and it's based on the amount of federal tax credits that people are accessing. So if fewer people are enrolled in coverage, it means we might lose out on federal funds here in Minnesota moving forward. We also run the risk of returning to a 2016 sort of situation where carriers stop participating in some or all of the market, and that would limit people's choice of insurance. Here, this chart shows the projected costs of the program moving forward. There are a couple items I did want to just, if you're familiar with the program and have looked at estimates, these estimates compared to previous year's estimates. Enrollment in the individual market has increased substantially. So we had over 180,000 Minnesotans in 2024, and we're expecting this number to increase given the open enrollment season that Minsure just completed in January. Second, we previously had included the enhanced federal subsidies in our estimates, so this chart also reflects a lower federal pass-through amount because we're assuming those enhanced federal tax credits will not be continued. So we know reinsurance works, but we also know that funding it has been a real challenge. So following the lead of other states, we are proposing instituting an assessment to help ensure that there is a stable funding source for Minnesota's program. As part of this, MCHA would administer roughly a 2% fee on insurance companies, and so that would include large and small group health insurance plans, as well as other companies that might write health care products. The assessment goes back into the health insurance marketplace, and it helps to fund the reinsurance program itself. Creating this assessment does require some administrative updates to our waiver, but it should not require us to fully resubmit our waiver application. We also assume that funding for the basic health plan or Minnesota Care is held harmless in this proposal. The proposal reduces the size of the reinsurance program if the federal funding for the basic health plan is affected. And with that, I am happy to take questions.
Thank you for your presentation, Deputy Commissioner. I do have just a couple of backgrounding questions for you. Do we have an idea, if you go on to Minsure and you know, pick a silver or bronze plan, you kind of look at what the annual deductible is and what the maximum out-of-pocket is, and are you able to quantify how much that premium has gone down because of the ARPA subsidies versus the 20% that the state of Minnesota has as kind of the goal on that? Deputy Commissioner, do you have any insight on that?
Chair, thank you for that question. I don't have those numbers. Minsure would probably be able to quantify. They're in the best position to be able to quantify the impact of the enhanced tax credits.
Yeah, and I think what you're, thank you for the answer on that. I think what your question, or the information I see in here, talks about what happened from the state portion of this, but it's more than the state portion of this, with the contribution from the reinsurance program. It's the enhanced federal credits right now
that would go away, causing a price increase. And what we may or may not be able to do here in the state of Minnesota in the way of reinsurance can also have an impact. So it could be more than 20%. That would just be the state's contribution to try for savings. Am I understanding that correctly, Deputy Commissioner?
Chair Driscoll, yes, there are two things that are happening. So there are the expiration of the enhanced subsidies that are going away at the end of 2025. And so that is going to increase costs for a percentage of people who are receiving those enhanced tax credits. The impact of the reinsurance program going away, just that reinsurance program going away, is 25%, a 25% increase.
And then one other quick question. What else has an influence on premium increases? I know, normal operating costs and things. Do mandates that the legislature passes also hit this individual market? And if so, does that have an impact on premiums as well? Deputy Commissioner?
Chair, yes, there are multiple things that go into a rate increase for a health plan. And that includes what we mostly see is just the cost of care is increasing, so it's more expensive for health plans to pay providers for just providing that basic care. So, like, the cotton balls are more expensive, it's more expensive to pay nurses, it's more expensive to just provide that basic care. So that is what's driving most of the cost.
And my last question, and Representative Stevenson has a question that I see as well. Members, if you have questions, please let me know as well for the Deputy Commissioner. In the individual market, the payments that come from the insurance companies to the providers, they're not at the Medicare rate like they would be for Medicare or for Minnesota Care. They're more at the market rate of reimbursement. Is that correct?
Chair Driscoll, yes. Oh, Driscoll, it is at a commercial reimbursement rates that they pay more than a state-funded program.
Thank you. And I wanted to point that out for folks. That's important to know that when you're a provider of health services and you accept Minnesota Care or you accept Medicare, you're reimbursed at a significantly less than what it costs you or market rate for those services. And as a result, you can be poorer as a business at 5 o'clock when you close your doors than you were at 8 o'clock that morning when you opened up your doors. And this is an important stabilizer, not only for individuals and their health and their peace of mind, but it also contributes to those clinics and hospitals and providers at a market rate to be able to help offset some of the other expenses for lower reimbursement or for people who have no health insurance whatsoever and are unable to pay. So it's a delicate ecosystem, no doubt. Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Deputy Commissioner, you mentioned the interaction, the potential interaction between reinsurance and the BHP, the basic health plan, which, you know, we don't talk a lot about in the Commerce Committee, but we're talking about Minnesota Care, just to translate. And I'm wondering if you can educate the committee a little bit. Maybe an unfair question to you since you are not involved in the administration of Minnesota Care, but I think it's really important for this committee to understand the history of how reinsurance and Minnesota Care used to interact and what changed and then what the risk is going forward, because the governor's proposal for reinsurance addresses that concern. And as we consider reinsurance in this committee, I think it's really important that we do too. So could you speak to that about what the history is about how reinsurance and Minnesota Care used to interact and then what changed and what we're worried about going forward?
Representative Stevens, just so that I'm clear, are you looking at prior to the ACA or with the MCHA program, or what were you thinking? Just clarification for my benefit. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, Mr. Chair, I'm talking about there was a rule change at the federal level during the Biden administration that saved the state of Minnesota a tremendous amount of money. In terms of its interaction between reinsurance and Minnesota.
Thank you. And because we're not on the Health Committee, which has jurisdiction over the Minnesota Care, I want to provide clarification.
Yep.
Thank you. Deputy Commissioner.
Mm-hmm. Chair Representative Stevenson. So, yes, I can speak to it briefly, and I think if there are more specific questions, we can certainly, those are probably best directed to someone from Department of Human Services. So when reinsurance first passed, it lowers the federal tax credits and the BHP funding formula. So the funding formula for Minnesota Care is also on the amount of federal tax credits that the state pays. So when we lowered our federal tax credits that the federal government was paying to Minnesota, it also lowered the amount of money that the BHP or Minnesota Care was receiving from the federal government. The federal government subsequently put through a rule change that fixed that funding formula and held the state harmless for having a 1332 waiver or having our reinsurance program present. So they have since been able to, they calculate the BHP funding now based on our premiums before reinsurance comes through.
Representative Stevenson, follow up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Deputy Commissioner. That's exactly what I was thinking about. And members should just understand that, you know, reinsurance has been a successful program. It used to come at an additional cost to the state of Minnesota because we had to make up for the lost revenue to Minnesota Care, and that, you know, put a strain on the health care access fund. That was corrected a few years ago around the same time we last extended reinsurance, but there's some risk that that will change again. There are only two states, as I understand it, that have BHP that would interact this way, and I'm not even sure if the other state has a reinsurance pool. So we are kind of out on an island here, and if the federal government were to change the rules, and you might be aware that the federal government is changing a lot of things right now, particularly in healthcare policy, it could be a big problem for us in terms of financing Minnesota Care, particularly when you think about the interaction between that and Medicaid, which also is potentially facing really substantial federal funding changes. So this could be a major budget issue for us that we should be very cognizant of. The governor's budget proposal did address this interaction, and we should be thinking about that when reinsurance comes up in this committee, as we should also be thinking about how we fund reinsurance. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. I am curious about how the $50,000 attachment point was determined. What was the analysis that was done? And I know you may not know that, but I am interested in how the program is set up and moving forward into the future.
Deputy Commissioner.
Chair, Representative Ryer, I don't have that information, but we're happy to get that for you. I don't recall why they set it at 50 and 250.
Okay. Representative Ryer.
Thank you. That would be great. I would appreciate that, Mr. Chair, Deputy Commissioner, because, you know, to me, if I look at the increase of both the amount that was paid and the number of enrollees that were unique beneficiaries of that, and I'm wondering if it's driven by the increases in healthcare costs, or if it's driven by people being sicker, or both, or if that $50,000 is an artifact of many years ago when healthcare costs were different, and if we should be looking at adjusting that as part of our consideration of moving forward with reinsurance to reflect the current healthcare market. Thank you.
Deputy Commissioner.
Representative Ryer.
Deputy Commissioner, we just ask you to come a little bit closer to the mic.
Oh,
thank you.
Sorry.
You're fine.
You
thank you. We
I
can hear you
forward.
Now.
These chairs are really slippery.
I assure you it's not intentional.
Representative Ryer, I think that's a great question to be asking. A lot of states do have different attachment points and set up their reinsurance programs differently based on funding needs and the particulars of their healthcare market.
Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for being here and for your proposal. And I admit this is a question that kind of comes out of Chair Stevenson's question, and I know that, you know, I'm new to the committee. So I'm just hoping you can make a little bit explicit what Chair Stevenson was implying, like what is that budget implication? What does it, like what happens if the federal government decides that it's not being held harmless? Like these are concepts I would appreciate a little bit of actual explicit explanation of, because I know that there's implied consequences here, but I don't actually know what they are. So I would love to hear them made a little clearer. Thank you.
Deputy Commissioner, are you able to answer Representative Finke's question?
Chair, Representative Finke, thank you for that question. It's a good one. I'm not able to speak to DHS's particular budget, but we can certainly work with them. them to get you some the right information.
And just a, for the benefit of the committee, at the time that we begin to look at legislation to address the reinsurance program, we will no doubt end up in Ways and Means, regardless of what happens. And I see the soon-to-be co-chair of the Ways and Means Committee, who was one of the previous testifiers or members asking questions on this, knows this. And so the ultimate funding mechanism will not be determined by this committee or any other committee other than Ways and Means, and it will likely end up in some type of global agreement at the end of session. For those of you who have been around here and those of you who haven't, you know, get your seatbelts on and put your tray tables up, because it's kind of how it works towards the end of session. With that, we may end up having to kind of wait to see how some of this stuff plays out. But because of the nature of this and how important this is to so many Minnesotans, and if we don't do something here, folks, just remember that the costs don't go away. It's not like, oh, we saved X many dollars here. It finds itself into other areas through someone who has you know, uncompensated care at the hospital or the clinic, and that puts pressure on them. And we know from previous testimony that Fairview Hospital has had some issues, and I'm not speaking ill of Fairview. They have actually been here and testified in previous years about how delicate things are for them, and rural hospitals and rural clinics and the like. So those will be affected. We also put extra pressure on the social safety network here in the state of Minnesota as well, when people end up without resources and have to file bankruptcy and lose assets and whatever the case is. So they don't go away. They just get placed somewhere else in the state budget. So, again, just some backgrounding on this. And if I'm not mistaken, I'm going to ask by nod of head, Representative Stevenson, Representative, I think you are the only two members in the legislature that have carried the reinsurance program or the reauthorization of the reinsurance program. Am I correct?
I have. I don't know who else has.
Well, there's anybody here to disprove my statement, so we'll go with that. And I am going to be the chief author of the reinsurance effort. So we are fortunate to have history and knowledge on this in order to be able to work through this. And we're going to hear from the very first author of that. Representative Davids has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Davids. Chairman. Uh-huh. I'd like to make a point on Representative Ryer's question. I think it's a very good one. When I wrote the bill, the first attachment point, I think, was $50,000. Now, that hasn't changed. Research?
Oh, Chair and members, no, it hasn't changed.
Okay.
Representative Davids.
You might want to take a look at that. Representative Ryer. Yep.
With that, I see no other questions, Commissioner. If you want to stand by, and we'll bring some other testifiers up if conversation leads us back to, if you're available. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Our next testifier is Dan Andreessen from the Senior Director of Policy and Government Affairs for the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. Mr. Andreessen, welcome to the committee, and when you're ready, if you'll state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dan Andreessen with the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. We are the trade association representing Minnesota's nonprofit insurers, which includes Prosper Shield of Minnesota.
Sure, Andreessen, I'm just going to ask you to adjust the mic and bring it that closer.
Thank you. Representing Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, Health Partners, Medica, Stanford Health Plan, and UCARE. Thank you for the opportunity today to discuss the state's reinsurance program. As was mentioned, the program began in 2018. The individual market that was on the verge of collapse. For the past 8 years, it's been a resounding success in keeping the market stable and providing insurance options to the entire state while lower premium. Reducing premiums results in more Minnesotans being able to afford health insurance and maintain their coverage. When Minnesotans have health insurance coverage, they're more likely to receive preventative services and seek care before a problem becomes an emergency. Building off of the Deputy Commissioner's testimony, As you said, the state uses an attachment point model. Anything that's below $50,000 and above $250,000 are completely paid by the health plan. It's that band in between that the reinsurance money is used for, and that's for 80% of those claims. Eligible claims are submitted on a quarterly basis by health plans to the Minnesota Health Association. Once these claims are verified and matching funds are received from the federal government, The state makes payments to health plans 12 to 18 months after the health plan had paid that claim to the provider. Even though that payment is retrospective, since the health plans know that the subsidy is coming, they're able to account for this in their rates and lower premiums. These transactions are summarized in quarterly annual reports posted public on the association's website by independent actuarial firms. This alone is the number of reports that's done every year on this program. This is from the 2023 plan year. Reinsurance is one of the most audited programs in the state, and everything you need to know is in these reports. These reports show how much is spent and how it is being spent. This includes breakdowns on reinsurance payments by health plan and product. You'll see in the report that's in your packets on page 18 of the report, only nonprofit insurers who have operating margins between 1 and 3% receive reinsurance payments. This includes Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, Health Partners, Medica, Quartz, and UCare. They're the only plans that are in this market. The report also breaks down reinsurance payments by metal level, plan type, exchange status, claim spend, geographic rating area, and which chronic conditions are being subsidized. High medical costs for over 4,200 Minnesotans were subsidized in 2023, including people living with diabetes, asthma, heart conditions, rheumatoid arthritis, cancer, and more. Now, we often hear a lot of misinformation about this program. The assertion is that the program is a bailout or a handout to insurance companies. This subsidy is for patients and keeps money in the pockets of your constituents that they would otherwise be paying in premiums. The money passes through health plans because we're the ones processing the medical claims. None of these funds are kept by health plans to cover administrative costs. All reinsurance funds are being used to pay for medical claims for chronic conditions. Reinsurance money is being used to pay for the endocrinologist who's helping somebody live, the oncologist who is helping someone battling cancer, the cardiologist who is helping someone with a heart condition, or a respiratory therapist treating somebody with asthma. Reinsurance subsidizes the care and, as a result, lower premiums for everyone in the middle. As was mentioned, there's been several analyses on this program. In 2021, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services did a report on this showing that premiums were reduced 22 to 36% than they otherwise would have been. The advantage of this program is that the operation of it is completely invisible to enrollees. No one needs to enroll in a special program, fill out extra paperwork. Everyone who's buying a product on the individual market is benefiting from this benefit. This is much, you know, in some ways better than using premium subsidies on their own, which only target a certain select number of enrollees in the individual market, and you actually have to buy in the exchange to get those benefits. There's also no matching federal funds to this type of approach. Now, regarding federal funding of the program, as the Deputy Commissioner mentioned, states use different types of models, whether through its state funding or assessments, and Minnesota has been funding their program through the general fund and healthcare access dollars. And there'll be arguments made that we should move this all entirely to an assessment type model. I do want to note that both the healthcare access fund and the general fund are funded in part by several assessments that are currently being placed on health insurance companies. Insurance in general, not just health insurance, but in general, pay a 2% premium tax, which nets around $380 million to the general fund. There's an HMO premium tax of 1%, which nets around $122 million that goes to the healthcare access fund, as well as a 0.6% HMO surcharge that nets around $258 million to the general fund. Plans also pay a 3.5% exchange fee to fund and insure. So I would argue that health plans are already helping to pay for reinsurance. And if you wanted to make sure that these taxes were actually going towards reinsurance, you could redirect them to the any new taxes will lower the effectiveness of the program, meaning premium relief for Minnesotans will be less. Now, as was mentioned, we're in a unique situation this year. The ARPA subsidy is going away, and so there could be significant disruption this year. Now, before I conclude, I just want to mention that in your packets, there's a fact sheet that summarizes in my testimony, as well as a letter signed by business groups, providers, and insurers part of this program. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Andreessen. I don't see any questions from the committee at this time. Again, just ask you to stand by in case the discussion brings us back to areas that you have some information. and can help the committee. Our next testifier this morning is Bentley Graves, the Health Care and Transportation Director for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Mr. Bentley, welcome to the committee and ask you to state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, my name is Bentley Graves. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I thank you for having this hearing. We strongly support the reauthorization, the extended funding of reinsurance in Minnesota. Reinsurance has successfully and efficiently done exactly what it was intended to do, and that is to lower premiums in the individual market. Reinsurance has lowered premiums by about 25% by leveraging state and federal dollars to pay for the high cost claims of very sick individuals in the individual market. By doing this, we've taken these costs out of the calculation of premiums for those in the individual market, lowering them, as I said, as much as 25%. Now, as we have begun this conversation this session about what to do with to continue stability in the individual market, there have been some other suggestions about moving away from this type of reinsurance program to something else. Among those has been a suggestion that we ought to move instead to some sort of single-payer public option model. We had a lot of discussion about that sort of approach, that sort of idea the last couple of years. And I think for us, the biggest concern with that is that that's a model that works by, frankly, paying doctors and hospitals about half, if not less than that, for the care that they provide. And that has a whole host of unintended consequences elsewhere throughout the healthcare system. So we would encourage the legislature not to look in that direction. And another suggestion has been, you know, rather than using this attachment point reinsurance model, we ought to just move instead to some sort of program we can directly subsidize folks buying insurance on the exchange. And at least for this point in time, there are some concerns with doing that generally, but at this specific point in time, you know, one of the concerns with doing that is that we don't have waiver authority to do that and would therefore lose out on federal funds to help pay for this. But there are also increased administrative costs, increased potential administrative burdens for folks accessing those dollars. But probably our biggest concern is the fact that going a route like that, the sticker price for the individual market would increase by 25% or more. And our concern is that we might then find ourselves back in a situation where we were in 2016, where the headline premiums in the individual market are skyrocketing. Folks may or may not understand that if they go through the process, they can maybe get that down on the other end. But the reality is that most of these programs that have been proposed in Minnesota would direct that relief only to those buying on the exchange. So those buying off the exchange wouldn't see the benefit. And again, the concerns about general market stability, I think, are real with a situation where you would pull out reinsurance and have the sticker price, at least for premiums in the individual market, going up significantly. And what that would do to scare off folks from continuing to participate in the market. And then finally, we've heard some discussion from the commissioner and department here today about maybe paying for this differently. I would just say we have very real concerns about any proposal that would raise insurance costs in some effort to lower insurance costs. We know that right out of the gate, if we went with the model that the governor's proposed, that the effectiveness of this program would be less than it is today. As was made mentioned by Mr. Andreessen, the previous testifier, there are a number of healthcare taxes that are collected. If there is an interest in having this industry or some segment of the industry help to kind of directly fund reinsurance going forward, there are ways to repurpose those dollars and put those into this program. But ultimately, we strongly encourage the legislature to continue to pursue a broad funding base that will ensure we get the greatest relief to folks in the individual market. With that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify, and thank you for having this hearing today.
Thank you, Mr. Bentley. I do not see any member questions at this time. I'm going to invite you, as I have with other testifiers, to stand by in case the conversation brings us back to something you may be able to help us with. Before I move on to our next testifier, but I will ask him to come forward, it's Mr. Ben Baglio from the Minnesota Nurses Association. I want to go to Representative Davids. And the reason I'm going to Representative Davids, he was the first author of the reinsurance program. And he has no idea what I'm going to ask him, and so the chair looked at him. Something I don't see from Greg Davids very often. It's something to be relished. In all seriousness, Chair Davids, in 2016, I was in the legislature, and so were you. Can you give people an understanding about what happened when we went to the exchange and with the Affordable Care Act, what was happening with insurance premiums, and why we had to step in or felt it was important to step in? on how it affected different counties across the state and carriers withdrawing from the state of Minnesota, and the availability of health insurance to help meet health care needs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was a couple issues, and I don't like to use the word crisis, but we were in a crisis. Premiums going out of control and carriers leaving the state. And at the time, there were some counties where they weren't going to have anyone there to represent that, usually a small rural county. So those are the two things we're trying to address, premium, but probably more at the time than that was access. We had a real access problem coming, and because of this, companies stayed and some more came in. So,
yeah, thank you, Chair Davis, because as I recall it as well, but we had four or five providers in many of the counties in the state of Minnesota, and over a period of a few years, they began to withdraw. And I think it's important to underscore that, as Representative David said, some counties in the state of Minnesota were going to be left with the inability to have residents purchase any kind of private health insurance whatsoever. And those states that, or those counties that remained, maybe only had one option. It was a very expensive option for them. And so we stepped in with the reinsurance program to try to invite the companies to come back and say, we'll do a cost sharing with you on this, because we know, as the commissioner's testimony today said, it's been a growing number of people who are in this individual market who rely on this as a mechanism to be able to purchase insurance. So we don't see that in the marketplace today, as it has stabilized. And I would assert that the stabilization is a lot having to do with the efforts of the legislature over the years with the reinsurance program. Chair Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And one thing that I did was we were looking for a place in the statute to put this. And the old 1976 Minnesota Comprehensive Health Plan, MSHA, we thought, well, why don't we just revive that and call it the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association? And I think they've done a great job with it.
Editorial comment coming by the Commerce Chair right now. I remember the days of MSHA. And I remember how effective MCHO was in the state of Minnesota, and how Washington was having planes cycling back and forth from Washington to Minnesota to talk about and to see how that program worked. And it goes as far back as the Clinton administration, even the Obama administration, and others coming back to see how effective this program has been with the MCHO program. And the ACA pretty much eliminated Minnesota being able to have the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Insurance Program, as we had traditionally seen it. Chair Davis.
And Mr. Chairman, the MSHA, the original MSHA, toward Jenner, had a very, very effective, a very, very good director named Lynn Gruber. And you could always trust Lynn Gruber, because she was out golfing and she hit a shot on a par three and it went awry. And then her next shot from the tee, I would call that a mulligan, but she got a hole in one, and she put on her scorecard a three. I couldn't believe it. That's how honest she was. Remember Lynn Gruber? Yeah, she was very good.
There's not going to be a quiz at the end of this, and if there was, that question would not have been on the quiz. With that, we're going to go to Mr. Baglio. Welcome, and if you'll state your name and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I don't think I was alive for half of those things talked about, so I'm glad there's not going to be a quiz there.
Rub it in.
Just kidding. So my name is Ben Baglio. I'd like to first thank you for allowing me to testify today on behalf of the Minnesota Nurses Association, or MNA. We represent 22,000 registered nurses who work directly at the bedside with patients in hospitals across our state. While caring for patients and their families, nurses witness firsthand not only the barriers to accessing services through our chronically understaffed hospitals, but they also see firsthand the struggles patients endure in dealing with the various and completely unnecessary barriers created by profit-driven health insurance companies that regularly deny claims for even the most vital medical treatments, often as part of their regular standard operating practice. This is why MNA not only supports establishing a state-administered health system and eliminating the unnecessary health insurance middlemen altogether, but is also why we continue to oppose using even more taxpayer dollars to further enrich the very industry that has been pillaging our healthcare system, raking patients through the coals by denying claims as often as their algorithms tell them they can, and then using those profits to fight off any changes that would bring about greater accountability or a better system. In less than a decade, Minnesota taxpayers have already shelled out over $1 billion directly to these massive corporations. I'd also like to point out that most of these entities coming with their hands out are so-called nonprofits, meaning they already have an obligation to operate for the public benefit and in the public interest. And yet, when you look at the ridiculous profits the biggest health insurance companies are raking in and how much these nonprofit CEOs are making, it's blatantly obvious that this is not how these health plans or health insurance corporations actually operate. If the legislature is to consider reauthorizing reinsurance, MNA strongly urges legislators to require it to be paid for by fees on insurers, the ones making these record-breaking profits, and not on the taxpayers of Minnesota. We'd also ask that any extension be contingent on protecting funding for Minnesota Care and that these protections be codified into law to protect Minnesotans who rely on these programs for coverage. Minnesota does not need to continue to be a national outlier for how much public dollars our legislature shells out to the private insurance industry, which has been largely done with few strings attached. So at a minimum, we ask that any reinsurance bill that passes should include actual requirements that hold them accountable to how they use these public dollars. We're only kidding ourselves if we think they are not using these dollars on administrative costs or wherever else they want to shift their costs to. Mr. Chair and members, I'll conclude with this. Given public sentiments right now around the health insurance industry and how Americans are feeling about the amount of money these guys are making off the backs of sick and dying people, I'd ask you all to think hard about whether you want to go back to your districts once session is over and tell your constituents that despite a tight budget, it was a priority to give the health insurance industry $500 million handout this year in hopes that for once they'll do the right thing. Thank you.
Any questions for the testifier? I do have one question. You had suggested that the monies that the insurance companies are receiving for the reinsurance are used for their administrative profits. We had a testifier who said that this report is an audit. Have you seen this report, and can you point out in the report where that might be? I don't have it today, but if there is something and there's a conflict in one person's testimony versus another, I'd really like to know that, and I think the committee would as well. So if you can find that and let our office know, we'd be happy to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will talk to our research team who's dug into that a little bit at M&A. I also just would say, I mean, if you're asking someone for $10 because you owe a $10 bill, like they're just going to offset the cost, right? So if they owe $50, they come to the legislature asking for $50 to cover their costs, they're like not just absorbing their costs, right? So that money is coming from out of the budget regardless. And so if they were putting the profits back into the system, we would feel a little bit more, but there isn't any proof of that, is I guess what the point I was trying to.
And again, I'm asking you to
yep, I'll follow up with you, Mr. Chair.
I would like to see if there's actual evidence where you can show them that the audit may be an error, that this committee has a right to know that if there is, and whatever the right answer is. So if you have information,
definitely.
The committee would be open to seeing that and hearing that.
Yep, I'll pass it on.
Thanks, Chair. Our next testifier is Lars Nystad, the policy director of Isaiah. Mr. Nystad, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Lars Nystad. I'm the policy director for Isaiah, which is a statewide nonprofit organization working people working together for racial and economic justice. No matter what we look like or what corner of the state we're from, all Minnesotans deserve access to quality, affordable health care. We do have three main concerns we'd like to raise today about reinsurance. First, the cost to the state, especially in this moment. Second, the lack of transparency of the program. And third, the impact to Minnesota Care. So first, on the cost to the state, reinsurance has been very costly. We've spent over $1 billion since 2017 on reinsurance. The latest proposal to extend it shows a price tag of around $850 million for the next 3 years. Of the 18 states that have reinsurance, Minnesota is somewhat of an outlier in funding it through public taxpayer funds as opposed to fees on the insurance industry and other mechanisms, such as the governor proposes. We would suggest that insurance companies are probably in a better position at this moment than the state is to fund reinsurance if it is continued. And in terms of the timing of the cost, with all the cuts and the chaos and the confusion coming from Washington right now, we think it would be unwise to rush into reauthorizing this same program without an alternative payment. you know, and to those cuts coming from Washington, the likely loss of the enhanced premium tax credits will already be driving up health insurance premiums an enormous amount. There's going to be spikes, maybe 20 or 30% for premiums on the individual market if those enhanced premium tax credits go away. So thousands of Minnesotans will already probably be pushed out of private health insurance because of those cuts. So we hope that enters into the conversation. Those cuts will also likely blow a pretty big hole in the state's budget, making it harder for the state to fund important needs of the state, such as not just health care, but affordable child care, housing, and other needs. So with all that happening, and as you've said already, Mr. Chair, we think that the reinsurance conversation needs to be had in the context of the overall budget discussion. So it was encouraging to hear your remarks on that. Second, as to the transparency of the program, to say that reinsurance is obscure would be kind of an understatement. People basically don't understand what reinsurance is. I've tried to explain it to my wife several times and had very little success at that. People, I think, on the individual market have very little understanding that reinsurance exists and their premiums are being held down through this subsidy. And that lack of transparency, we would suggest, fuels misunderstanding and mistrust both of government and the insurance industry. So finally, I would just like to mention, and I know it's more for the Health Committee, but the need to protect Minnesota Care is really important. Minnesota Care is a highly important program that's been providing health care to working families for over 30 years. Under the first Trump administration, federal reimbursement for Minnesota Care took a hit around $500 million or more. While that problem was fixed in the federal rules under the last administration, there's no guarantees that that will continue. So we would suggest that the legislature should look at direct premium subsidies. Chair Wicklund in the Senate has a proposal. We think this would be a more transparent and a less risky proposal. It could be designed in a way that could apply both to the exchange and folks off the exchange, and could also be funded through mechanisms such as the governor is proposing. Finally, I'd just like to note there is a letter from 9 organizations, including ours, in your packet. I hope you'll pay attention to that and want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. I see no questions, but if you want to stick around in case conversation leads us back to you, we invite you to do so. Thank you. Our next testifier today is Ann New Brindley, the Health Policy Director from the Minnesota Business Partnership. Welcome, Ms. New Brindley, if you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, and good morning, members. As stated, I'm Ann New Brindley, I'm the Health Policy Director for the Minnesota Business Partnership, and I do appreciate having a few minutes to engage in this conversation about reinsurance this morning. It comes as no surprise to anyone that I'm in full support. The Minnesota Business Partnership represents business leaders largest employers, who collectively employ nearly 500,000 workers in Minnesota and 4.8 million globally. Minnesota consistently ranks among the top states for healthcare quality, as well as having among the lowest uninsured rates in the entire nation. Our state is also the 4th in the country for employer-sponsored insurance and 6th for employer contributions to their employees' health care. Every Minnesota Business Partnership company offers employer-sponsored health care to their employees. So why might I be here today? Well, affordability and access and equity in health care are key priorities for our members. Reinsurance has been an important piece of the puzzle in stabilizing not only the individual insurance market, but the broader health ecosystem across the state. Without its extensions, premiums could increase by 25% or more, leaving tens of thousands of Minnesotans without affordable coverage. Such a significant rate hike would not only put coverage out of reach for many, but it would also likely lead to substantial budget shortfalls for healthcare providers and drive up insurance rates in the commercial market. And that's going to create widespread stability across the healthcare ecosystem. And not only do Minnesota Business Partnership members care about their neighbors and making sure all Minnesotans have affordable coverage, but they also understand that moving almost 100,000 people out of the commercial insurance market is likely going to lead to less preventative care for individuals, more uncompensated care for providers, higher insurance rates for workers across Minnesota, and frankly, potential disaster for healthcare providers who are already operating on the margins. Obviously, worst case scenario is possibly resulting in service closures and in service lines or facilities, creating less access for everyone across Minnesota. It's also at odds with the commitment of Minnesota's healthcare providers to pay their workers really well. When we adjust for cost of living, Minnesota nurses are paid higher than any other state in the country, and that's something we should all be really proud of. I understand that when reinsurance was first passed in 27, the hope was that it was going to be a temporary program to stabilize the market while a better solution was found. In reality, the reinsurance program has been really effective at ensuring care for people for whom care is expensive, typically people with chronic or complex conditions that require consistent care. 18 states followed Minnesota's lead and implemented their own reinsurance programs, and no other state is considering letting it go because it just works. Reasonable conversations can and should take place on the best way to structure the program moving forward. But ending it entirely would have disastrous effects for both individuals and systems. The Minnesota Business Partnership is committed to supporting affordable, accessible healthcare for all Minnesotans and a stable healthcare ecosystem. And reinsurance just plays a crucial role in achieving those goals. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Brindley. I have 18 people who want to ask you questions.
They all know where to find you, Mr.
Or maybe not. Thank you for your time here in front of the committee. Our next presenter and testifier is Stephen Rubis on behalf of the Minnesota Health Partnership of, on behalf of the Health Plan Partnership of Minnesota. Mr. Rubis, as you make your way, welcome. Invite you, once you're settled, to introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair O'Driscoll, members. My name is Stephen Rubis with Alameda Public Affairs here on behalf of the Health Plan Partnership of Minnesota. HPPM's mission is to advocate for accessible, competitive, high-quality, and affordable health care across Minnesota. HPPM urges the legislature to pass an extension of the reinsurance program, which would help stabilize the insurance market in Minnesota. Without an extension, insurance premiums are projected to rise by over 25%. With Minnesotans already battling rising costs across the board, now is not the time to add a crushing financial blow like that. We also recommend that reinsurance should be passed quickly as to not get caught up in end-of-session budget negotiations. Additionally, as members are debating this issue, HPPM urges members to reject any attempts to increase healthcare costs in other areas to pay for reinsurance. Raising taxes on healthcare to pay for reinsurance is not fixing the issue, but rather just a reshuffling of the deck chairs. Thank you for your time, and I would stand for any questions.
Questions for Mr. Rubis this morning. Mr. Rubis, we do have one from Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rubis, could you remind me which health plans your organization includes, please?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Ryer, the health plans in our group are United Healthcare, Cigna, and Allina Aetna.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rubis, so can you talk to me about the effect that this would have on your businesses, just looking at the claimants by are you the Medica portion of the accounts that are listed there?
No, we are.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Ryer. No, we are.
Okay, so you're actually your...
Representative Ryer.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
So you're actually not selling business in this section, so you're not really directly affected, is that right?
Mr. Rubis.
That is correct. We are, sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Ryer, you know, we are just here on behalf to advocate for stabilization of the health insurance market.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. With that, our next testifier is Dan Arlen from the LeClaire Group. Again, Mr. Arlen, as you're making your way to the testifying table, thank you for being here with us today. When you are settled in and ready, introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, representatives. My name is Dan. I'm vice president with LeClaire Group, and I've been in the insurance industry for 26 years. Those first 16, I had my own agency. And it's been mentioned in this committee already, but when you look back to prior to ACA, we did have something called MCHA, which really helped stabilize the individual market. As soon as the ACA came in, that whole high-risk pool was dumped into the individual market. Hence, from that point forward, we were seeing increases from 25, 30, 40, almost up to 50% up until reinsurance came into place. Once reinsurance came in, we started seeing the market stabilize again. Without reinsurance, you take a look and we will see, come back to this whole area of these 20, 25, 30% increases. In 2025, a bronze plan, the average premium, is about $1,500 a month for the privilege of having an $18,000 deductible. You add on top of that, now all of a sudden going to 25, 30%, you're going to get well over $2,000 a month. That gets to be incredibly high. Thank you.
Mr. Arlen, thank you for your testimony. I have a question for you. Given your number, is that for an individual or is that for a family in the individual market? Just kind of help quantify that for us.
Mr. Chair, that's for a family of four. So a husband, you know, a family of four. Roughly about, and this was Washington County, and a bronze plan.
Mr. Arlen, just another follow-up for you on that. So, you know, $18,000 a year premiums, $1,500 a month. What would the, I don't want you to disclose anything maybe about a client, but if you could just generally talk about what was the household income on that? I'm just trying to figure out what percentage they were paying of their household income or on insurance premiums.
So, well, again, it will depend. This was without any subsidies, so that's what that would be.
Okay.
And yesterday when I ran this, I said, okay, we'll take a look at someone with $200,000. They would still get a $200 subsidy if someone were at $200,000 a year.
Okay. And then it goes up by 25%, so it's 24,000. So you're looking at about 12.5 to 13% of their gross income that would be used for health insurance premiums, absent any deductibles and out of pockets, if for use. Is that
right? And Mr. Chair, what we would see happening in the past when this went on is the family would say, "I can't afford this anymore," and so they would just typically the husband and wife, mom and dad. They would drop their coverage, and hopefully they would end up putting their children on Minnesota Care.
Other questions for Mr. Arlen this morning? With thanks to the committee, thank you again, sir. And our final testifier, and if there's ever any members of the public that are here today that would like to testify, we'll have you identify yourself as well. And Mr. Tom Wright, the legislative chair of the National Association of Benefit and Insurance Professionals, is our final testifier this morning. But again, if there's other members of the public who would like to testify, catch our attention and we will bring you up and you can share your thoughts with the committee in this work group this morning. Mr. Wright, welcome, and state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, committee members, good morning. My name is Tom Wright, and I'm the legislative chair for the National Association of Benefit and Insurance Professionals. I work with independent agents who serve individuals and small employers throughout the state of Minnesota. I'm here today representing the Agents Coalition, which includes four professional associations, including ours, the National Association of Benefit Insurance Professionals, the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, the Professional Insurance Agents, and the Big I. We strongly support the extension of the reinsurance program, and we thank all the legislators who've supported the program in the past and plan to in the future. The individual market is not only where individuals and their families get coverage when they do not have access to employer-sponsored coverage. It's where entrepreneurs get their coverage, and it's also relied on by individuals between jobs and early retirees. State funding has always been a part of the supporting high-cost individuals. In 2013, $176 million in MSHA claims was not covered by MSHA enrollees. That gap was funded through MSHA. In 2014, with the implementation of the ACA individual market, it was 27,000 high-risk MSHA enrollees entered the relatively small individual market, but without the MSHA funding. The benefit of this is that the ACA reform was that high-risk individuals who previously only had a few choices of plans could now buy any plan in the individual market. After just a few years of claim experience, we found that the premium impact on change drove huge premium increases, and carriers were leaving the individual market, and consumers, our clients and your constituents, were getting headline-making double-digit premium increases. No matter if you supported or opposed the ACA, this was a financial challenge for this market segment that everyone recognized needed to be addressed. The missing piece of the puzzle was the premium support that should have followed these high-risk individuals. Reinsurance filled that gap a few years later. Without the reinsurance program, it was uncertain if any carriers would have chosen to continue offering coverage in this market segment. Reinsurance is really just a continuation of the premium support from MSHA to this market segment that has always experienced adverse selection and needed help from the rest of Minnesotans. We're pleased that Governor Walz included the extension of reinsurance in his budget. We do, however, have significant concerns about the proposed new MSHA tax. Instead of adopting this new tax on a narrow base, we encourage you to consider much broader funding sources, including the general fund or the healthcare access fund, that reflect the benefit of this program to all Minnesotans. It's the only fair way to fund the program that suffers from adverse selection. When the reinsurance program was first implemented, according to the Minnesota Department of Commerce, this plan resulted in premiums being 20% lower in 2018 than without the plan. All the benefits of this program go directly to consumers in the form of lower premiums, as shown through the Commerce Department rate filings of the carriers. No funding goes to the bottom line of the insurance carrier, since they can only make a claim for actual medical bills and then are reimbursed by MSHA within the narrow parameters of this plan. They cannot receive reimbursement for overhead and administrative cost. We ask that you renew this program with two principles in mind. One, provide a permanent base funding so that our clients are not subjected to the political tugs of war that happens every few years, and support broad-based funding either from the general fund or the healthcare access fund, and impose the reinstatement of the MSHA tax. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. Any questions for the testifier? Seeing none, with the committee's thanks, appreciate your testimony today. Is Deputy Commissioner Dreyer here? I do have some questions that have kind of come up as a result of some of the testimony that was given today. Thank you. Yeah, come on up. And you may or may not be able to answer the questions, but you're... Lead Hurst said there may also be someone from DHS that's here as well. Maybe that individual would like to come up as well, because it's going to be falling one of these two areas. We've got our both phone friends. We've got it narrowed down. We know we're going to get the answer. We just need to know who. Thank you.
Yes, welcome.
And here's the question. We've heard many people talk about the taxes that are in on the MSHA groups already, and I've kind of done the math. It's around 3.5% from what people were talking. My question is this. Do other states have like another 3.5% tax on their plans and then have another tax like we're talking about in the governor's proposal today? Or are they taxing the plans without having that other underlying tax that the plans are paying already. In other words, is there one tax or two taxes in those states kind of compared to what we're looking at? The one we already have that equals about 3.5% plus the proposal for the governor. And like I say, I'm not sure who or how. That's why I'm glad we have both of you. And they're looking at each other like, who's going to take this one? Deputy Commissioner Dreyer?
Chair Driscoll, I am not familiar enough with individual states' tax setups to be able to answer that question.
State your name for the record.
Yes. I'm Elise Bailey, Budget Director of the Department of Human Services. And I also don't have enough knowledge to answer your question. Sorry.
We are very fortunate because Representative Herr has sat on the Health Committee and is on Commerce, and she may be able to shed some light on this. But Representative Herr?
Actually, Chair O'Driscoll, I actually had a question. I cannot shed light on this, but I'm willing to do some homework. I did have
Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. And I did actually just want to ask the question that if we could actually have Representative Finke's question answered, since we have a DHS representative here, I think that would be really helpful for everyone. So if maybe, Rep. Finke, I don't know if you need to repeat the question so that maybe DHS can answer that.
Representative Finke, did you want to restate the question for the testifiers?
Sure. Thank you, Chair, and lead. Her. So my question, I mean, it was following up on Chair Stevenson's question, but, you know, about the budget implications of things changing at the federal level if Minnesota is not found to be harmless, right? Like what are the actual, what are we looking at in terms of the literal explicit budget implications for the state of Minnesota?
Chair Driscoll, Representative Finke, yes, good question. If the feds were to no longer have the hold harmless adjustment in the formula, the state would incur an additional $140 million a year.
Representative Herr? Okay. For the record, that's a very interesting question about federal funding. About 14 years ago, 15 years ago, there were some bills that were floating around the legislature that contemplated that very same question, not just in this area, but in other areas. What would happen if the state of Minnesota would lose 25, 50, 75, or 100% of federal funds that were coming? And the reason that that was being floated was mounting federal deficits. And at some point, the feds were going to pull the reins back in on what was happening. And so those bills never went anywhere, and we don't have that data or a base in which to work from. But even though that didn't happen, the state agencies were encouraged to address that in some kind of a pull it out of the drawer, at least a base plan in which to look from on that. So if those concerns are coming forth, I would hope that the agencies would also have that data available to share with the legislature if that happens at some point in the future. Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair. This is a question for you. Would a bill like that be in the purview of this committee?
Representative Finke, that's a great question. It was really directed at all of the legislative proceedings and things. So it probably went through the state government finance, since mm-hmm. that's where most of the state funding comes from. And then it would have applied to multiple agencies. It was 15 years ago. I don't remember all the details. Okay. But as we're having this conversation today, that comes to mind.
I appreciate it. I think this is going to be a very important question in every committee. So I'm curious about having those conversations. Yep. Thank you.
Yep. So, and like you say, that just dawns on me. And Representative Davids, you were here at that time as well, and probably remember some of those bills that dealt with that very question about what will the state do if there's, and it wasn't having to do with reinsurance. It had, because we weren't contemplating reinsurance at that point. We're talking about what happens with mounting federal deficits and spending. One, will the state, and one, will states and governments be saying, we have to cut back on those kinds of things? And agencies, again, were asked to do that because it never ultimately ended up becoming law. So that is not something that question is not foreign to the state of Minnesota. Other questions, Representative Herr?
Just comment.
Thank you. I appreciate the follow-up on that. Is there anyone from the public who would like to testify today? Hang on, Representative Hewitt. Anyone from the public who would like to testify on the matter before the committee today? If not, thank you. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I really appreciate one of the
comments you made earlier, and there's not too many providers in the room today. I don't know if there's any actually, but as a former provider and dealing in this space, I think anything we go forward with, it's so important that we make sure the providers are made whole. I know that they don't get, and all of us have had hospital bills that are 10 different bills, right? The insurer gets one, you get one, and they're different amounts. But the truth of it is that to make the provider whole is so important to the economy of the hospital, of the area, of all the providers, the doctors. I think that's so important because I think that right now they're being paid at what they're contracted for, and providers have to cost shift because Medicaid is so low, Medicare is so low. So I think it's really important that we stress that anything we go forward with this has to have that in. And I also like, I was looking at the notes here that were submitted by the buyers that basically said that they're paid within 30 days, and our providers all over the state have that problem with cash flow. And so I think that's also something that we have to look at. But thank you for letting me share, Chair. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I've been kind of listening this morning, thinking that surely somebody is going to talk about the terms of adverse selection and insurance death spiral, but nobody did. And I think that those are concepts that are very important for members of this committee and the health committee to understand as this discussion goes on. So what was happening in the period just before insurance was first implemented was that the premiums were, you know, as has already been noted, going up and up and up. And as a result, you know, really the only people who it made sense to buy insurance because the rates were so high were, you know, people who had one of these expensive chronic conditions that you know, shows up so prominently in the Wakely report. And you both adverse selection and insurance death spiral are easily Googleable terms. There are lots of good explanations out there. Anybody can Google them. But basically, by implementing reinsurance, we nipped an insurance death spiral in the bud by the state picking up a lot of the cost of covering people with expensive chronic conditions to keep the rates low, to keep healthy people in the market. And that's the key. What would happen if we eliminated reinsurance or didn't come up with some alternative is that we would immediately send our individual insurance market into an insurance death spiral and the whole market would collapse.
Aren't you the happy provider of news today? I fully agree, and having been working in the industry, I'm very familiar with adverse selection and how that works and how that plays into the equation. But you're exactly right, and as Ben mentioned earlier, Representative Elkins, these are folks who, for whatever reasons, are the people who have the chronic conditions or are no longer able to be in an employment situation where their employer may be able to provide those because of health concerns and health reasons. And so some people refer to this group, and I don't always like using this term because I think it's somewhat derogatory, the sickest of the sick of people, because it's not. We've got entrepreneurs who are in there who have broken away from their company, who are got the next garage entrepreneurship, right, the next Bill Gates, the next, you know, whomever out there to be the next Fortune 500 company potentially from Minnesota. And so to be able to keep that robust resource available for people is extremely important. Representative Davids.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as you move forward with your bill, I think it's important to realize that the history of this reinsurance goes back, you know, some years here. But when we tried to renew it the first time, I think it was Senator Klobuchar, Senator Smith, Tina Smith, and Congresswoman Craig, all were very, very helpful to me to get this thing going again, and Republicans too. But I remember those three actually wrote op-eds and letters and so forth saying that they agree with me. And it was kind of a scary situation for me at the time. And it's probably why I have primary opponents every 2 years. But it was a very, very bipartisan issue, and I hope we can do that. Spirit here that we need this. It works. You heard the Commerce Department. You heard many say that this works, and I hope we can keep it going.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Representative Smith, yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Just one thing to add. I do think we're talking a lot about the reinsurance program and the necessity of it. And we also need to say that the cost of this program has been increasing. And the estimates, even now, each year, biennium over and over is increasing and increasing. So as we talk about how to fund this is a good discussion, whether it's an evaluation, whether it is out of the general fund, I mean, just my initial thoughts to continue to dedicate out of, or not to continue, but to have out of the general fund this amount of money in perpetuity to the future is, I think someone else said, a hole in our budget that we don't know how large it will grow. I know we're not talking specifically about that bill now, but I think that is a huge discussion we have to have, that this is a commitment if we're going to go that which I hope we don't, that is seemingly from both past actual expenditures and from the estimates we have received is just going to increase.
Thank you, Representative Smith. You bring up an extremely important point, the cost of health care, whether it be in this market or individuals who have Minnesota Care or Medicare or a commercial plan or an ERISA-style plan. Those costs are just generally going up. Those are just mechanisms that help to pay for the cost of health care. And as a result, when the health care goes up, and the reimbursement rates don't go up with that and things, you put more pressure in the system. And I don't want to co-opt your comments, but you're kind of underscoring what I was saying before about the fact that the costs don't go away if we don't do a reinsurance program. All we're doing is pushing those costs elsewhere within the system. And so we're going to spend those dollars or similar dollars if we don't address this and in some way, shape, or form. And that's, again, closing of clinics because of unpaid care, hospitals, other providers, maybe not in your neighborhood, but in someone's neighborhood in the state of Minnesota. And my goal as a legislator, it's always been to leave the place better than I found it. So any other member thoughts or comments? We have a few minutes. Yep. My final is going to be, we're going to be back here tomorrow. We've got a few bills that we're going to be talking about. We're also going to have a discussion on mandates. What are those? How do they work? And tie into this insurance conversation as well. And Representative Herr, you would like to have the final member comment before we wrap up today. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. And I'm going to channel probably my best Chair Gomez, because I respect Chair David's and Chair Gomez's relationship with Texas. I'm going to try to emulate some of that, but I'm going to take Chair David's advice when we heard one of his bills in Texas. Let's not talk about the money, but let's talk about the philosophical reasons for why certain things come up. And I, you know, I really appreciate the discussion today. And I don't want to politicize this or make this feel like it's, I'm trying to make this like a partisan issue, but I do want to point out that the way this sits with me is that I see who we're fighting for and when we're fighting for them, that when we're fighting for people to have gender-affirming care or abortion access or those who are undocumented, that the fight to fund those types of things becomes so heated and so personal. And yet when we're fighting to fund something that helps independent contractors and small businesses and early retirees, that this conversation seems so cordial, and which I think that's how it should be. But I don't want us to lose looking at the fact of who are we fighting for, fight for them, and when we think somebody's deserving of an investment and when they're not. But I also want to point out that I think that there's also always a debate around nonprofit insurers and for-profits and if they're the same. And that's not the debate that I want to have today, but I do also want to point out that, you know, when we talk about who is making record profits, we forget that, like, a United Healthcare Group who made $14.4 billion in 2024 is not the same as a health partner who broke even. And so I think that this only illustrates the complexity of the situation that we are talking about here. We may be talking about reinsurance itself, but that we cannot do that without the context of how we look at our insurance industry, our healthcare industry, and what it means from both sides to see the points that we are making and oftentimes the inconsistency of what we say and do and how we choose to fund that. And I agree with everything that's been said today about the importance of reinsurance and why that has to be funded. But, you know, and just it's a matter of where we think that funding should come from. But I do also, but my point is that I think that we all should, as we walk away from this conversation, think about that this is actually a conversation of who is deserving, who is not, and who oftentimes we are saying is undeserving of these types of investments. And so I just wanted to have an opportunity to state.
Thank you, Representative Herr. And during your comments, I was reminded of a situation that happened in Representative Perryman's in my area in central Minnesota, and that's the St. Cloud area. There were three clinics, primary clinics, that were providing health care. It was St. Cloud Medical Group, it was Health Partners, and it was CentraCare. We are down to CentraCare. In 10 years, we've lost two other providers. One wanted to acquire the other, and the state of Minnesota is actually going to stand in the way of that merger because they said that's going to be putting too much of the providing of health care into one clinic in the area, and that if people were going to try to become patients, that it would just stand in the way of doing that. We were able to convince the powers to be that there was no other alternative on here, and that merger did take place. Otherwise, there would have been a substantial number of people in central Minnesota who would not have had a place to be able to have health care. Recently, Health Partners, like within the last few years, announced that they were closing their central Minnesota campus as well. We are down to one centralized regional clinic and a few other specialties. This is very important to Minnesotans, whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, an independent. And I'm hoping that this legislature will put forward the fact and set aside the fact that there can be lots of getcha-gotchas on these kinds of things and do the right thing for Minnesotans. And each committee is going to have heartburn, and each member is going to have heartburn on this, but it's going to get worked out in some way, shape, or form. And this committee isn't going to have the answer. This committee is going to be able to have a portion of and contribute to the solution and the answer. I just implore you to stick with this issue, and we will get there as a team. Representative Herr and I have worked really hard to try to be in a bipartisan for the people of the state of Minnesota, and we're asking you to help us with that. And this is our first ask, and there's going to be other asks along the way. So I'm hoping that as a team we can stick together and move it along, and that they're putting the pieces of the pie back in, that we can get the pie together for those folks. And that's why I brought up Fairview earlier, because that's not in my neighborhood, but if you're in the Twin Cities metro area, it's in your neighborhood. And if that clinic goes, where are your folks going to go? Representative Elkins, I can join the happy wagon today, too.
It will be a very large...
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we are adjourned.